This week's episode of the Rural Woman Podcast is brought to you by the patrons of the Rural Woman Podcast. This amazing group of individuals contribute financially to the Rural Woman Podcast to ensure the stories of women in agriculture hit your earbuds each and every week. Want to join them in supporting the stories of women in agriculture while getting access to extended episodes, patron-only episodes, and other great perks? Head on over to wildrosefarmer.com to learn more about how you can become a patron through Patreon. Hi, I'm Caitlin Dubin, and this is the Rural Woman Podcast. I'm a first-generation farmer who married into agriculture. Born and raised in a city, I was so unfamiliar with where my food came from, but I was determined to figure it out. Through my journey into agriculture, I saw women who were strong but humble, often taking a back seat. To me, these women were leaders who deserved a seat at the table. I created the Rural Woman Podcast to share the voices of women in an industry whose stories often went untold. The rural entrepreneurs who live and breathe their work, full of grit and pride. We come here to share our stories, to be in community with each other, to be challenged and inspired, but most importantly, to be celebrated and to be heard. We may not all live, farm, ranch, or homestead the same, but we are all connected. We are rural women, and our stories are worthy of being told. Hey friends, we are celebrating the fifth anniversary of the Rural Woman Podcast this year, and we are taking a look back through the inspiring stories that have been shared with us throughout the years. Looking back through these interviews, there are women who have been successful, who have persevered, and who have been resilient. There are women who have shared their stories who may not farm or ranch or homestead or work in the business that they used to. Things may be different for them now, but I know their stories have impact, and I hope that this is a solid reminder for those of you who have shared your stories or who are inspired to share your stories. Our stories are forever changing, and just because we may not farm, ranch, or homestead the same, our lives might not look the same. There has been growth here. Through the good, the bad, and the ugly, I think it's a solid reminder for all of us to look back to see how far we've come. So my friends, I hope you enjoy these throwback podcast episodes coming your way, and thank you for being here and for helping me celebrate the incredible stories of women in agriculture through the Rural Woman Podcast over the last 5 years. Enjoy. Give us a little bit of your background story and tell us who you are and where you're from.
All right. So my name's Becky Doherty. I'm co-owner operator with Stonepost Farms. We're just a small family farm, myself, my husband, and our two kids. We started farming in 2016. Prior to that, we lived near Edmonton, and we originally came from down south by Lethbridge. I'm originally from Radium Hot Springs, BC. I grew up a small town country girl, and my parents were also entrepreneurs. They ran a small trail riding business. So I grew up in the tourism side of things and helping my parents run their business. And then for post-secondary school, I moved out to Alberta, which is where I met my husband, John. We went to university together at the University of Lethbridge. And after university, we got married and started our careers, which led us to the Edmonton area. And John's long-term goal was to be a farmer. So in 2016, we made that jump.
So on your website, I was doing some research beforehand, and I really loved your tagline for Stonepost Farms. It says, farming with ethics, sustainable and regenerative agricultural practices, producing nutrient-dense food from our farm to your table. So I really, really enjoyed that tagline. And I want to ask you or get you to tell us more about how Stonepost Farm uses these principles to grow and produce food for people.
Yeah, we developed that one last winter, and we've kind of really been trying to figure out, yeah, what our path is over the first couple of years. And we turned to the University of YouTube among like podcasts and books and everything. And we came across regenerative agriculture and holistic management and really liked the principles it had to offer. And, you know, everything on the farm is tied together and you're basing everything of your soil and your plants, and the health of those determines the health of everything else. And we really connected with that. And I think a lot of that has to do with both my background and my husband's background, which is also in natural resources. So we have that really good understanding of how soils work. So it really made sense for us to connect to regenerative farming and holistic management. And so we take principles such as rotational grazing, bale grazing, that kind of thing with our cows, as well as our pork and our chicken, and then looking at permaculture, permanent garden beds, that sort of practice with our gardens. We don't use any sprays on our farm at all. So when we look at weed management, we're using our livestock to manage the weeds and that kind of thing. So looking at it a very holistic way and trying to connect the dots without using anything that we don't already have, which is animals and our land.
So my name is Alicia Parsons Lushington. I grew up in rural Nova Scotia in an area with, you know, lots of woods and fields and dairy farms around and horse farms, I guess. And I've made my home as an adult in the Muscadabit Valley in a little community called Myers Grant. And so I work for the provincial government and the Department of Agriculture and a crown corporation called the Nova Scotia Crop and Livestock Insurance Commission. And I work pretty hard here as well in my community as a kind of a community organizer and chairperson of our community center. And I think that's kind of who I am, I guess.
Very cool. So tell us about your current career and the path that got you to where you are today.
Okay. So it wasn't a very straight path, but I think that that can add interest and I don't have any regrets about the path I took. When I graduated from university and I had this degree in a Bachelor of Science in Agriculture with a major in pest management, I basically started looking for work. And so I was applying for kind of any job that seemed like I might be qualified for. And the first opportunity that I really had was with, interestingly enough, the Nova Scotia Crop and Livestock Insurance Commission, which is where I work today. I started there as a field agent. And so what we would do is we would do inspections on growers' crops. We would do measurements and this kind of thing on crop yields, like GPS measurements of field sizes and that kind of thing when people had insurance claims. And I enjoyed that. Then when my first year was over, there was a major restructuring in the Department of Agriculture, and about 100 people, I think, were terminated because of the restructuring. And not the job that I was in, but because I was so new, I was kind of bumped out of my position. And so I had to go look for, you know, some kind of employment. And I ended up working for a bank as an agricultural banker, business banker. And I really hated it. And I know people have rewarding careers with banks, but it was not for me. And I really didn't want to be in that situation. So I was talking to my dad about kind of what my plan was, how I was going to deal with the situation I found myself in. And he said, you know, I always thought that you should be a lawyer. And I said, what? And my dad was in law enforcement. And I said, well, I never really thought about that, but that's kind of interesting. So I started reading up about it and I was like, oh yeah, that could be kind of interesting. And I applied to law school and I got in. So I was going to law school.
So my name is Allie Fender. I am originally from San Diego County in California, and I still reside here. And I live on my parents' working beef cattle operation. with my little family. I have two little boys and my husband, Bryce, and we have our own little operation going on as well. So that's where I'm at. I'm about an hour and like 10 minutes from downtown San Diego, so I'm not too far away, but I'm up in the mountains.
So along with your cattle, you guys also have another venture happening as well. Tell us more about how beer has been added into all of this mix.
Yeah, so my husband and his brother, Brandon, have been into beer for a long, long time. Brandon actually has his own brewery at the moment. They're actually in the process of shutting down the brewery that they have right now and opening up a new one where we live, because their brewery, their first brewery was up in Santa Ana, which is about 2-ish hours away from us. It's in LA County. But he really wants to move his whole family back to Julian, which is our hometown, and start up a brewery here. So Bryce has always been kind of involved with the beer aspect of things with his brother, too. And long time ago, maybe like 10 years ago or so, Bryce and Brandon had some dreams of producing beer on one single location, because that's something that's like not known to be around in San Diego. And San Diego is actually the number one craft beer capital in the United States. So that's something that a lot of the breweries don't really have here, because, you know, San Diego is not known for growing grain or growing anything of that sort for that type of market. To my knowledge, San Diego is more known for like ornamental shrubs and citrus, avocado, but not grain production. That's more like a Midwest thing. So a lot of the breweries down here actually import their malt and grain from sources like that from out of the state mostly, or maybe even up north, I'm not sure. But on the ranch, we actually have some fields that used to be planted for hay. And Bryce and Brandon kind of were thinking about trying to plant those fields with barley or wheat. And the reason why we chose barley is because it's very hardy. And in our area, we have like up and downs with drought, and barley's pretty drought intolerant. So it's something that would be beneficial to try to grow here.
My name is Nikki Weert. I run a small scale sustainable cut flower farm near Castro, Alberta.
So my name is Jenna Houck, and I farm at Lazy Tea Farm with my husband and my parents.
My name is Dana Bloom. My husband and I run Red Tail Farms, and we're just straight south of Castor.
So, you ladies obviously are all near one another. You are same room, but let's talk about what you all have individually done on your farms and what you are now doing collectively.
Sure. This is Nikki speaking. 2 years ago, we've been spending a lot of time together. We all knew each other really well. Like, Dana's husband, Ian, is my cousin, so I do know him really well. And Dana's, you know, they've been dating since high school, so she's a cousin to me as well. Brett and Jenna and I went to high school together. They're just a couple of years older than me. So we've all known each other for a really long time. And we all kind of moved back within a few years of each other to the farm, and we started spending a lot of time together. We'd organize dinners, little potluck dinners with just, you know, each other, and chat a lot about farming and how difficult things were, how difficult marketing was, you know, how like isolating it can be. And so 2 years ago, we decided we're going to formally make our informal group, the Prairie Farm Project, which is pretty much just a way of labeling ourselves to help each other market our product, which we have done. The relationship with Chartier kind of all began around the same time. And our product has all been featured in there. And that's, you know, largely because of the collaborative marketing. We help each other a lot on the farm. So we host multiple work bees at each of our farms each year. All of us bring a really unique skill set to the group. So Brett is an electrician, Ian's a carpenter, Dana and Jenna are both like really, really good at organizing and like just super capable human beings. And then I have a writing background, so I often get like tasked with writing stuff for their websites, that kind of stuff. And then we hosted our first farm-to-table dinner as a group summer of 2018, where we had like 130 people sit down for a completely local farmer oriented dinner, which was served up by actually the chefs at Chartier at the time. And since then, we've hosted another, I think, of these big farm-to-table dinners featuring all of our own products. Together, we're the Prairie Farm Project, and we just spend a lot of time eating and drinking and hanging out together, being each other's little support network out here in rural Alberta.
You can help support the stories of women in agriculture to be shared through the Rural Woman podcast on Patreon. What is Patreon? It's a membership-based platform that helps fund and support creators like me to create and produce content like this that you all love. New to the Rural Woman podcast Patreon is ad-free listening and patron-only bonus content and exclusive episodes. Learn more and join the patron gang today at patreon.com/the Rural Woman Podcast. On this week's episode, you'll meet fashionista turned first generation farmer, Star Haroff.
So some people might not know this, but I was actually born in Madison, Wisconsin, but I actually grew up in North Vancouver, British Columbia, and made a stop in Oregon en route to Canada. I have a small hobby farm here. I spent the better part of 20 years working as an outerwear designer, designing high-end outdoor apparel. And I think that's a pretty good summary.
Obviously, I met you at a holistic management and grazing conference. So not really about wool there, but you are actually interested, or were interested when you started the sheep, about carbon beneficial wool. So can you tell us more about that and what that means and what was appealing to you about carbon beneficial wool?
Well, so there's two pieces, right? I mean, there's the regenerative grazing part, which I think, other people that you've had on can speak to much better than I can. but, you know, basically the idea that grazing the grasslands is beneficial and that, we're sequestering carbon just through the roots and then keeping some of the organic matter on the soil. And then, of course, the roots hold the water and all those beautiful things. And then, of course, the sheep are fertilizing it and breaking down all those wonderful nutrients and making them available. So there's that piece, but the other piece that's specific to wool is that wool is 50% carbon, right? So not only are you sequestering carbon through holistic grazing and proper grazing management, but also the fiber itself, so you're sequestering it, and then also if you're composting any of it, you know, it makes a wonderful compost too, so.
My name is Sarah Beth Johnson, and I'm from Arkansas, and I'm from what we call the Delta of Arkansas. So the eastern half of Arkansas is what we call the Delta. We're on the off the Mississippi River Delta.
Tell us more about the demand for goat meat in Arkansas. Like I was chatting with you before we started recording, I'm surprised that there is a market in Arkansas, but again, I'm just being biased and just me thinking, like, where in the world people eat goat meat. And I wouldn't think Arkansas was a place they would.
You know, the ethnic population is one of the biggest areas that we can market to as far as meat goat goes, and that's selling the live animal as well as the meat. We have different populations, whether it's Hispanic or Indian, both of them populations around here really enjoy goat meat. And so we can provide them with a live animal to harvest to their specifications, or some places around here do sell the meat already harvested for them. And so that's been a big influence on our ability to sell goats. But the main thing that we do is for our family. We love goat meat, and it's probably my preferred meat of choice whenever I'm cooking. And so the more that we've cooked with it over the years, whether it's the church potluck or family get together, more people around have discovered that they like it too. And so I feel like if I get to the point where I can direct market the goat meat, that I'll have people that will want to buy it. I will have that demand because we've eaten it, we've shared it, we've cooked it for other people, and then we've shared with them how we feel about it and why we enjoy it so much. And so I think that people are interested to try it, even if it's not something that they grew up consuming.
Sarah Sash. For my listeners, Sarah, who are unfamiliar with you, give us a brief description of who you are and where you're from.
Well, I operate a dairy farm in Rosedale, BC, with my husband, Gene, and my brother-in-law, Grant. We run 3 Layley milking robots and have been working together as a team for 10 or 12 years now. It's their family farm, and I've married into the dairy industry, so that's an experience in itself, but I wanted to be part of things, and their dad, who is no longer with us, was really good about including me in the business. So I've been involved in the business since I've been here, basically. And then he passed away 5 years ago now. So our entire management team, until my husband turned 40 this year, has been under 40 all this time. So that's something kind of unique about our farm.
Tell us all about the operation and what your role is on your farm.
So like I mentioned, we built a new barn in 2015 with the robots, and we've been milking in there obviously for the last 5 years, but it's quite a change in lifestyle. We had a double 5 parlor before that we were running 3 times a day in kind of the build up to making that switch to robotic milking. My husband Gene leads us in growing all of the crops that we feed to our cows, and we farm about 150 acres of land around our main farm here. And my brother-in-law Grant is our cow guy, if you will. So he deals with all the breeding decisions and the day-to-day care of the cows in the barn. And we have 2 other employees that work for us, and myself and my mother-in-law. So that's the whole team. And in terms of my role, I do all of the business function side of things, you'd say. And I also love calves, so I spend quite a bit of time managing decisions about things in the calf barn. I work out there every single Sunday. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll see my adventures. I'm not a daily in the barn kind of farmer, but I'm in the barn definitely once a week all of the time. And yeah, that's kind of sums it up. And then of course I love to operate equipment when I can. So I always rake the grass. Sometimes I do some other things, whatever it is to help out and get things done.
I love that. And I love that you also love running the equipment, because I feel like that is the best part of being a farmer sometimes. Unless it breaks, and then it is not a good part about being a farmer.
So I'm Naomi D. Ryder, and I'm the modern milkmaid at Birdsong Farm, currently in Armstrong, British Columbia. I have lived here for 2 years now. Birdsong Farm initially started out in the next community over in Enderby, which was where I grew up with my family for over half of my life.
So take us from where you started with Blossom down the path of the dairy industry that you have been a part of for the last 17 years of your life.
Okay, so when Blossom had her first calf, 2004, it took a while since she wasn't milking when we got her, and she produced lots of milk, more milk than our family needed for fresh drinking, even with, well, 11 of us, if you count my parents. So I started making some cheese, and I wanted to expand out into some hard cheeses. I can't remember the year, but my dad came to me one time with a cheese-making book, and at that point, he still owned Blossom. I was just her caretaker. But like I said, I was in love with her. So my dad handed me this cheese-making book, and he said, if you promise to make cheese for the family, I will give you Blossom to keep. And, I mean, what are you going to say with that, right? Of course, yes, I will do that. Blossom is a Jersey cross, and I decided that I wanted a purebred Jersey. So I got in contact with Jersey Canada. Russell Gammon at the time, the general manager, put me in touch with an older farmer that lived near us who has raised Jerseys for almost his entire life. He became an awesome mentor to me. I got 2 different cows from him over the years. So I have my original cow family and then the 2 from my mentor and good friend, Don Hendrickson. It was about 2012 when people started asking me if I would teach cheese making classes. And I was like, oh, no one's going to take a cheese making class. And I decided, you know what? People keep asking me. I'm going to teach a class, and it sold out. And people were asking for more. So that was my start into cheese making classes to other people.
I'm Nicole Wren, and I'm a dairy farmer from Michigan. To go a little deeper, I've been married to my husband, Brad, for 12 years, and we have three children, ages 10, 8, and 5. We live on our dairy farm in Prescott, Michigan. So if you were to hold up your left hand, because that's the shape of Michigan, we live just below the knuckle on your index finger. It's about 40 minutes from Lake Huron.
I am literally holding up my hand and knuckle, and I can see exactly where you live. So, Nicole, if there was one piece of advice or some words of encouragement that you would like to give your fellow dairy producers right now, what would it be?
I think that this lifestyle cannot define who we are. Sometimes it takes an overwhelming breakdown to have an undeniable breakthrough. And I guess what I mean by that is the feeling that I'm a dairy farmer, and if I can't hold on to this business, then who am I? I'm a dairy farmer. I'm innovative, strong, and capable. You know, I come from an industry of people that can adapt to new challenges and be progressive in change. And while these last few years have been unbearable at times, I think it's important to take this overwhelming moment like we are experiencing right now and look for happiness wherever we can find it. So maybe I won't be a dairy farmer in the next chapter. It doesn't mean that I have to stay a dairy farmer and deal with unhappiness if I can find happiness in the next part of my story. So I guess that's my advice, is just to know that dairy farming teaches us things, but it doesn't define us.
Nicole, I'm misty over here.
Well, I'm Kyle Brisendine, and I run Willow Farm LLC, which is a small farm in southwest Michigan. We're at 92 acres right now, and we practice regenerative agriculture. We raise cows, sheep, pigs, poultry, and we're working on getting a beehive started, and we sell everything we grow through our on-farm shop.
That is very cool. It's like a little bit of everything that you have there.
It is. It's nice.
So you actually have quite an interesting story about your post-secondary education. So you actually hopped the pond and went to England for university. So tell us what made you decide to head over there and study agriculture in university in England.
It was just kind of a split-second decision. At the time in high school, I was riding horses, and I wanted to be able to ride horses in college. So I had gotten a book from the library that kind of explained different colleges and programs where you could ride. And I'm flipping through it, and my mom got hold of it, and she's kind of looking at the international ones, being funny. And one of them's like horse logging in France. And the other one was the Royal Agricultural University in Cirencester, England. And I looked it up, and I kind of looked at the page for 30 seconds and went, that's where I'm going to college.
That is so cool. That is such, like you said, a second decision and a big decision to go all the way over there for learning. So that's very cool.
Yep. And that was the only college I applied to, too.
That's great. That's so cool.
Thanks for listening to the Rural Woman Podcast. The Rural Woman Podcast is more than just a podcast. We are a community. A huge thank you to the Rural Woman Podcast team, audio editor Max Hofer, and admin support from Kim and Co. Online. A special thanks to our Patreon executive producers, Sarah Riedner from Happiness by the Acre and Carrie Munven from Laystone Farms. To learn how you can become a Patreon executive producer or other ways to financially support the show, head on over to wildrosefarmer.com to learn more. Be sure to hit the follow or subscribe button wherever you listen to the podcast to get the latest episodes directly on your playlist. And if you are loving the show, please be sure to leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or any other platform that accepts ratings and reviews. You can connect with us on social media at The Rural Woman Podcast and with me at Wild Rose Farmer. One of the best ways you can support the show is by sharing it. Send this episode to a friend or share on your social media. Let's strengthen and amplify the voices of women in agriculture together. Until next time, my friend, keep sharing your story. Did you know that you can get this same great episode of the Rural Woman podcast ad-free? I get it. Listening to ads during a podcast isn't always my favorite either. But in order to keep the lights and coffee pot on here at the Rural Woman Podcast Studios, they are necessary. I am so grateful to each and every one of my sponsors, but if you yourself would like to skip the ads while supporting the show, consider joining me over on Patreon. Patrons of the Rural Woman Podcast get ad-free episodes starting at Tier 5 on their podcast player of choice each week, plus some other great benefits. Find out more by heading to the link in today's show notes to learn how you can become a patron through Patreon.